Hello, I'm R.A. Spratt. I write and perform this podcast. If you'd like to support the show, I'm a children's author, so you can buy a book by me, or you can buy me a coffee by going to buymeacoffee.com/storiesrasspratt. It's an easy way to make a small thank you gift to the show so I can keep kicking this can down the road. The podcast directory you're using right now should have a link to my Buy Me a Coffee page in the show notes, or you can type it into your browser. That's buymeacoffee.com/storiesrasspratt. All contributions are gratefully appreciated. Hello and welcome to Bedtime Stories with me, R.A. Spratt. All right, well, we're in luck. It has finally stopped raining here in Bowral, so there won't be any rain pitter-patter while I'm recording today, but we are going to have to race to get this done because I'm coming down with a headache and I can't see properly when I get a bad headache. So I'm hoping to get this episode recorded before the headache overwhelms me. Also, my mother is coming to visit me today. obviously, I am an adult. And my mother is also an adult, but yeah, I've been a writer for 26 years now, and I've written 30 books, and I've written for 35 different TV shows, but I'm not entirely convinced that my mother realizes that I have a job. She always comes and visits me, and because I work from home, she thinks I can just spend all my time with her, and I've got book deadlines, and I've got podcast deadlines, so I'm really hoping to get this recorded before she arrives, because once she's here, I don't know what I'll do. I have to wait till she goes to sleep. It's like the kids. I have to wait till she goes to sleep at night before I can finish sorting this episode out. But, you know, I'm sure I'll get it done. It's Tuesday. It's 10 a.m. on Tuesday, so I've got until 6 a.m. tomorrow morning to get this done. I'm sure it can happen. Let's just get into it. Got another Grimm's fairy tale today. And I'd never heard this one before. I've got a collection, like you can get these big, like you've probably seen in the bookstores, collections of Grimm's fairy tales. They've usually got maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen, maybe three dozen of the most famous ones. But actually, as you get the original collection of Grimm's fairy tales that they collected in Germany a couple of hundred years ago, there's actually 210 stories. Actually, that's not the original edition. There's less than the original edition, but the Grimm brothers brought out several editions within their own lifetime. And so by the time they'd finished the project, there were 210 stories in their collection. I know everyone refers to them as fairy tales, but they actually didn't refer to them as fairy tales. But anyway, I was flicking through my copy of Grimm's stories. I found this one, which I didn't know before, and I really liked it. It's got some really nice plot devices. As a writer, I appreciated that. So I thought I would do this one for you this week. So let's just get into it, and I hope you enjoy the story as much as I enjoyed it. Here we go. This week's story is The Peasant's Wise Daughter, as told by Nanny Piggins. Here we go. It was after dinner. Nanny Piggins had made chocolate chip crepes smothered in chocolate sauce with extra dipping chocolate, so the children were feeling philosophical. This is the feeling you get when you've eaten so much that you fear you've lost the ability to walk, so you invent idle small talk so you won't have to get up from the table. If the house caught fire, pondered Derek, and you could only save one thing before escaping, what would you choose?
Oh, I know exactly what I'd choose, because I've been in that position many times, said Nanny Piggins.
You have? Asked Samantha.
Oh, yes, said Nanny Piggins. When you live in a circus tent next door to a fire breather, it's a common occurrence.
So what do you take? Asked Michael.
Usually just the slice of cake I'm eating at the time, said Nanny Piggins. You know, this actually reminds me of a story about a dear cousin of mine.
Did she have to rescue a cake from a burning building? Asked Samantha.
No, but she did find herself in other predicaments, said Nanny Piggins.
Hers is a story from the olden German story days. In fact, those Grimm brothers wrote it down in their collection.
A lot of your relatives feature in stories from the Grimm brothers' collection, Samantha observed.
I know, said Nanny Piggins. They're as bad as the paparazzi is today. Worse, in fact. With paparazzi, you just have to worry about a photographer leaping out of a bush and taking your picture, then splashing it all around the world on the internet. Whereas in the olden German story days, you had to worry about the Grimm brothers leaping out, writing down your life story and immortalizing you forever in their collection of tales.
which was much worse. People forget about paparazzi photos in a couple of days. Grimm's fairy tales are still being made into movies 300 years later. So what happened with this relative of yours, asked Derek? Well, it was my dear great-great-great times 24 greats cousin Louisa Piggins, and she was a very clever young woman. Because she was a pig, guess Samantha. Yes, she was. How did you know? Well, she was your cousin, and she was very clever, said Samantha. Was she stunningly beautiful too? Asked Michael. Of course, said Nanny Piggins, which is always a tremendous burden. The problem was, she was the daughter of a peasant, which made her a peasant, and peasants don't do the kind of work that requires analytical thinking or complex problem solving. And being a peasant, she was desperately poor and starving, because that's what peasants always do. But where they lived was a wealthy king, and he had a great deal of land, and he may have been a bit daft, but he meant well generally. He didn't like to see his people starving, and he had lots of woods and wilderness to spare. So the king granted the peasant and the clever daughter the use of a small plot of his land, so the peasant could grow some crops to feed himself and the clever daughter. The peasant was very grateful. He set to work digging the land, preparing the soil for planting. But while he was digging, the peasant dug up a solid gold mixing bowl. Huh? Said Michael. I know, it's weird, isn't it? That's what the peasant thought too. He rushed in and showed it to his daughter. We should take this to the king, said the peasant. It's the king's land, this is his property. I don't think that's wise, said the clever daughter. If you give him this solid gold mixing bowl, he'll want to know where the mixing spoon is. But there was no spoon, said the peasant, just this bowl. He won't believe you, said the clever daughter. He'll think you've kept the spoon for yourself, and if you take the bowl to him, no good will come of it. But the peasant was so grateful to the king that he paid no heed to his daughter, and he took the bowl to the king. The king took one look at this amazing solid gold bowl and asked, Where's the spoon? There was no spoon, just this bowl. You expect me to believe that? Bowls always go with spoons. You're keeping the spoon for yourself, aren't you? Well, you can sit in my jail cell until you remember where you put it. The king had the peasant dragged off and locked up in prison. The peasant was distraught. He was distraught that the king had been a big meanie pants, but he was also distraught that he had not listened to his clever daughter, so he was double distraught. Oh, woe is me! I am such a fool! If only I had listened to my clever daughter! Wailed the peasant over and over again, all day and all night. A week went by, and the king called for the prison warden. So has the peasant admitted where the golden spoon is? Asked the king. No, said the prison guard. The peasant just keeps wailing and wailing over and over. Oh, woe is me! I am such a fool. If only I had listened to my clever daughter. This made the king curious, so he sent for the peasant. What do you mean when you wail all day, if only I'd listened to my clever daughter? Oh, she's a clever girl, far cleverer than me, cleverest of all the clever people in the land. She told me not to bring the bowl to you unless I had the spoon too, that no good would come of it. The king was curious about this too. Bring your daughter to me. Let's find out just how clever she really is. So the clever daughter was fetched. Your father says you are the cleverest girl in all the land. Is this true? No, said the girl. I'm not the cleverest girl. I'm the cleverest person of either gender or age. The king laughed. I'm not joking, said the girl. Well, let's see how clever you are then, said the king. I shall set you a riddle. Go home now, then tomorrow come to me, neither naked nor clothed, neither walking nor riding, and travel down the main road into town without touching it. You're kidding, said the clever daughter. It's too hard for your clever brain, is it? Asked the king. Go home and puzzle over it tonight. If you come to me under these conditions tomorrow, then I shall free your father and make you my wife. Could you just free my father? Asked the clever daughter. Oh, no, said the king. If you are clever enough to solve my riddle, then you are clever enough to be my queen. It's not really a riddle, though, is it? Said the clever daughter. You just thought up three things that you think are impossible to do. Ha ha! You admit you're outwitted, then, do you? Asked the king. Only outstupided, maybe, muttered the clever daughter. But she went home and prepared to return the next day. What did she do? Asked Samantha. Surely it was impossible. Well, the first thing she did was bake a massive big round cake.
She ate a cake, asked Michael. Surely there wasn't time for that.
Oh, she didn't eat it, said Nanny Piggins. She just baked it. Then the next morning she rolled the cake out to the road and took all her clothes off.
Oh, said Michael. There was no one about, no one could see. Still, she was naked on the side of the road and next to a cake, said Michael.
She was trying to save her father's life, said Nanny Piggins. She was prepared to do anything.
Next, she ate a hole in the middle of the cake and climbed inside, so only her head poked out of the top and her legs poked out of the bottom. So she was not naked, but she was not clothed.
That's clever, said Samantha.
She wasn't called the clever daughter for nothing.
Next, she flung herself down on her side so that the massive cake was on its round edge. Her legs stuck out at one side and her head the other, like the axle of a wheel. And because the cake was round, it began to roll down the hill, picking up speed as it went. It rolled all the way down the main road into town.
So she got there without walking or riding, said Derek.
And without touching the road, said Nanny Piggins.
Brilliant, said Michael.
It was, and the king agreed. He released the peasant and married the daughter that very day.
But she wasn't in love with him, said Samantha.
Not straight away, agreed Nanny Piggins, but love works in mysterious ways. It's not always a bolt of lightning striking you in the head. Sometimes love sneaks up on you from behind. Sometimes it creeps up on you too slowly to notice, like a rising tide. And sometimes you find yourself loving someone, even though you know they're daft and silly, because they're very good looking and they mean well, and they live in a really fancy beachfront castle with a swimming pool, which is no small thing when your former residence is a peasant's shack. So the clever daughter and the king were married, and they got along very well. They grew fonder and fonder of each other day by day. The king thought himself very clever indeed for having found such a clever wife, because he was clever enough to realise that not being clever himself, it was handy to have someone cleverer around to ask for advice. Every morning the king made it his habit to go out amongst his people in the market square, because there were always good cupcakes at the farmer's market. It's always better to ride a horse when you're at a farmer's market, because you're higher up so you can spot the really good cakes before anyone on foot. And horses are tremendously good at running, so you can gallop over and shove them in your mouth first as well. So anyway, the king was doing this when suddenly, in the marketplace, there was a great commotion. Two peasants were fighting. The king was very concerned that their fighting might knock over a table of cakes, so he intervened.
"What is the cause of this disturbance?" he demanded.
It turned out that one peasant had brought three horses to market, and one of the horses had given birth to a foal. But the foal had wandered over to the next peasant's stall and laid down between his oxen. Now the owner of the oxen claimed that the foal was his. The king knew that it was his kingly duty to settle disputes such as this between his people. He wished his clever wife was on hand to help him solve it, but she wasn't. She had cleverly sent him out to buy cupcakes so she could have a lie-in. So the king did his best to sound important and wise, because a large crowd had gathered round to see how he would settle it.
"I see. Well, of course the foal knows best who its parents are. If he lies with the oxen, then he must belong to them," decreed the king.
"What?" exclaimed the peasant with the horses.
"Hooray!" cried the peasant with the oxen.
And the king rode off to buy his cupcakes, content with how he had settled the dispute.
"But that doesn't make any sense," said Derek. "It's impossible for an ox to give birth to a foal. A foal is a baby horse."
"Yes," said Nanny Piggins. "To be fair to the king, genetics had not been invented yet. But common sense had been invented, and that should have been enough to work it out." As you can imagine, the peasant who owned the horses was not satisfied. He burst into tears. The mare, who was the mother of the foal, was very upset about it too. The horse-owning peasant didn't know what to do, so he went to the cleverest person in the kingdom to ask for advice. He went to the clever queen. She had great sympathy with him. As a former starving peasant herself, she knew how terrible it was to lose one of your precious animals, so she told this peasant how to handle it. "Tomorrow at the marketplace," she said, "take out a fishing net, and when you see the king approach, cast it out on the cobblestones, then draw it in as if you're hauling in a great catch of fish. Then I shall tell you exactly what to say to the king."
The peasant did as he was told. As the king approached the next day, he threw out his net and drew it back in.
"What is that nincompoop doing?" asked the king.
"I'm fishing," said the peasant.
A crowd drew around because they were all curious about the peasant's strange behaviour.
"But how can you fish when there is no water?" asked the king.
"It is as easy to fish when there is no water as it is for an ox to have a foal."
Everyone around burst out laughing. They realised the peasant was talking about what had happened the previous day, and the king got really mad.
"Who told you to say this to me?"
No one," said the peasant.
"This was not your own idea," accused the king, "nor your own words. You're a nincompoop, and nincompoops don't say such clever things."
The peasant did not want to get the lovely, clever queen in trouble, so he refused to tell. But the king was having none of that. He ordered his guards to beat the peasant with the nearest thing to hand until the peasant revealed who had told him to speak in such riddles. The peasant was horrified. He didn't want to be beaten, so he took off running around the market. All the guards chased him. He ran around and around the square 5 times before he ran out of puff, and the guards caught up with him. The head guard grabbed the closest thing to hand, a celery plant, and raised it high, ready to beat the peasant.
"Stop!"
It was the queen who had called out. She had heard the ruckus and come to the palace balcony to see what was happening in the market square below.
"It was I who advised the peasant," said the queen. "For anyone with basic understanding of genetics, or just 1 milligram of common sense, should be able to realise that an ox cannot give birth to a foal."
The people in the square all started saying things like, "She's quite right.
It's the truth indeed.
It's as clear as the nose on your face, if your nose hadn't been cut off in a terrible accident."
The king was so angry to be so publicly contradicted and humiliated. He knew he shouldn't yell at his wife in front of everyone, so he strode into the castle so he could be angry in the privacy of his own home.
"You have played me false," declared the king when he confronted her. "I will no longer have you as my wife. You will leave this castle at daybreak tomorrow and go back to where you came from, to your peasant's hut."
"Oh, that's harsh," said Derek. "That's really rude," said Michael.
"Kings are allowed to be rude," said Nanny Piggins, "especially in the olden story days, which was probably why there were so many kings getting beheaded later on in the revolutionary story days. Anyway, the clever queen, now a clever peasant again, took this all very calmly."
"Very well," she said.
"And as a parting gift," ranted the king, he was really cross, "I will grant you just 1 favour. When you leave, you may take 1 single thing from this palace, the thing that is dearest and most precious in your eyes, so that, for the rest of your long peasant life, you may look at this thing and remember all that you have thrown away."
"My dear husband," said the queen, "if you command it, then it shall be so." She wrapped her arms around him for 1 final embrace. "Here, I have a parting gift for you." The queen took a piece of chocolate cake out of her pocket and handed it to the king. The king looked at it. It was beautiful to behold. This cake was so beautiful, the king seriously considered wearing it on his head because it was more stunningly beautiful than his most fabulous diamond-studded crown. As soon as the queen left the room, he shoved it all in his mouth and scoffed it down. Which is understandable. If you're feeling upset, an enormous big cake always makes you feel better. Or it makes you feel sick. Either way, it takes your mind off your troubles. But what the king didn't realise was that the queen had put a sleeping potion into the cake. So that night, when he went to bed, he fell into the deepest slumber. Then, before daybreak, the queen had the king wrapped up in a linen cloth and carried out to her carriage. She drove with him to her own little hut and laid him in her own little bed, where the king slept for a whole day and a whole night. When the king awoke on the following morning, he was astonished.
"Good gracious, where am I?"
He called out to his servants, but no one came. He called out to his guards, but no one came. He called out to his ministers, but no one came. Just then the clever peasant, formerly the clever queen, came in from her morning chores.
"What's the meaning of this? Where am I?" asked the king.
"My dear king, you told me I might bring away with me from the palace the thing that was dearest and most precious in my eyes. So I brought you." The king burst into tears.
It's such a happy ending. I want to burst into tears too, wailed Boris. Feel free, said Nanny Piggins. She was dabbing at her eyes herself. The king wrapped his wife in a big hug.
Dear wife, I am such a fool. Please say you will take me back so I can be yours and you can be mine once more.
Of course I will, said the queen. You may be a fool, but you are the fool who will always be dearest and most precious in my eyes. So they returned to the palace and got married again, which just goes to show how clever my cousin truly was, because she got a second wedding cake without having to go to the trouble of finding a second husband. The end. Time for bed.
So did you tell us that story? Because when I asked what would be the one thing you'd save in a fire, said Derek, you thought of your cousin taking her husband?
Well, yes, said Nanny Piggins, but there was no fire in the story. She loved her husband, but husbands are heavy and hard to carry out of a big palace. No, my cousin was too clever for that. If there had been a fire, she would have been sensible and thrown him out the window, then saved the nearest slice of cake. Cake isn't heavy, and if it becomes too heavy, you can always eat it to lighten your load. And as they pondered these words of wisdom, the children realised that they'd digested their food enough that they could walk again. So they all went outside to jump in puddles. And that is the end of the story. So we'll leave it there. Until next time, goodbye.